The Jack and Spike Show.
Come on, tell me, who are you?
Laura, there's an owl on the loose. You're listening to the Jack and Spike Show, and I'm perusing the news, and all I see is there's an owl that's terrorizing a neighborhood, and we can all expect there to be more owls happening. Who would have thought that an owl would be front page news across the board? And also,
who can we call?
For legal reasons, let me just say that that is a song, Who Are You? By The Who. 1971. Is excuse me, 1978, okay. When this came out. Roger Daltrey, Pete Entwistle.
Keith Townsend.
Thank you.
Keith Moon's last photograph on the album cover, sitting on a chair, said not to be taken away. He was dead within months.
And that is what we call in the business, my friends, free and fair use, because it's transformative in nature. And we are using it for educational purposes.
I really want to know.
So I really want to know what's going on with the legal system in terms of copyright law. So let's
thanks for ducking up for the F-bomb. I appreciate you.
I found the clean version for you, buddy.
I appreciate you. Yeah, buddy.
What we really wanted to start off with, though, before we get to the crazy owl story, is that there's this incident that happened at Spokane Elementary School. And what is so weird about this is that there is a controversy around this, which shouldn't really be a controversy. Mm-hmm. It should be just people understanding that sometimes people make mistakes and sometimes they say and do silly things. And we should all just kind of understand that the era that we live in now is different than what we might have tolerated previously. If I haven't been vague enough, there's a music teacher at Spokane Elementary School. I'm not going to mention her name. Because I feel like that, I don't feel like she had any ill intent in doing this.
That's okay. Good,
and so
good,
I want good. To respect that woman's privacy. She's been an educator since 1994, and she was placed on administrative leave as she promoted We Has Jazz, which is a jazz festival where the children were encouraged to come dressed as slaves and hobos. Slaves and hobos. Which is a great Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young record, right?
I don't think it ever got released.
No.
It was some of their best work.
Some of their best work.
You could also have the option of coming of someone ready for a night out at jazz clubs. She was trying to give students an idea of the period in American life with which the jazz she was hoping to teach took place.
But jazz was not a thing during slavery. It just wasn't.
I wondered that too.
No, jazz came as a result. A lot of people don't know. I'll break down the kind of genealogy of music for people. So where we get traditional American music, what we think of as like rock and roll or jazz, or really fundamentally American music, is that when you had you had the indentured servants who were primarily the Irish, and you had the slaves that were from Africa, and they were housed in the same spaces. A lot of people don't know this about American history, that indentured servants who were largely Irish shared the same living quarters, separate, but in the same, you know,
same level of societal level.
Exactly.
Like sect, is that what they call it?
Same
those?
Sect, but also like if I'm an indentured servant on a plantation and that person also has slaves, we're staying in the same huts on that side of the property.
And indentured servants work like a 7-year stint for their for the cost of getting them to the new world.
So these indentured servants had, which is another way of saying slaves, they had violins and they had mandolins and they had all these different instruments. And then they would combine those instruments with what the slaves had from Africa. So like kind of a gourd-like instrument that they would remake, or, you know, like the pots that they would take and put a string through it on a stick and pluck it.
Right.
That is where we get traditional American music. And then everything comes out, rock and roll, jazz.
Right. Delta blues.
Delta blues. That all comes from that milieu, that melting pot between the Irish and people who were taken from the Western continent of Africa. To say We Has Jazz is in fact racist. I'm sorry, it just is. To use that kind of, you're basically speaking in a very derogatory, very demeaning way. Again, I don't think this woman intended it to be so. She's been an educator since 1994. I just think that she missed the mark in the same way that there was a teacher from San Jose about 4 years ago who wanted to teach his students about black mathematicians throughout history.
Okay.
And so he showed up dressed as one of those black mathematicians with the black face and all.
Oh.
I don't think that he had any ill intent.
No.
He did not have this self-awareness to realize what he was doing. And so to say that, like, I understand that people are like, oh, Jack, you're being so woke about this. I'm not making the woke argument. I'm making the civil argument.
Yeah.
I'm making the argument that says we don't trivialize slavery and conflate it with hobos and jazz, because hobos are sweet and they've got sticks with satchels.
With a baller stuff on the back. I remember from the Saturday morning.
And they're
going
to be the king of the North Pole, right?
Yeah.
Lee Marvin, hobos and whatnot. And jazz is fun, right?
Yeah.
Harlem Renaissance,
yeah.
Jazz. We all know that good stuff. Slavery, not fun. I don't know if anybody knows this. Slavery is, in fact, not fun whatsoever. And we should probably not try to trivialize that part of history by saying we has jazz, y'all.
Poor decision. But not career ending, I hope. Isn't that the issue
now? I don't think
it
should be. It shouldn't be. She should just issue an apology and say, you know, I apologize for not having the awareness to engage in this kind of activity.
Is that what they say when they mean tone deaf?
Tone deaf.
Is that a good assessment of what that was?
It's a nice play on words, but yeah, it's a little tone deaf.
Puns are wonderful.
So students, regardless of race, were allowed to dress as slaves, hobos, or ready for a night out at the jazz clubs. I don't think people realize this, but slaves weren't actually allowed to go anywhere.
Not to the jazz clubs.
This fine teacher. And then on top of that, there was this statement that somebody made. This is a teacher who said, in regards to this incident, training doesn't work in this district because every training ultimately defaults to white comfort. And until we actually change making white staff comfortable, then nothing will change for black students, indigenous students, brown students. If we don't change that at the systemic level, then 20 years from now, we're going to have the same discussion. So shall we decipher that woke word salad? Shall we try to break that
training
apart?
Training doesn't work in this district.
No, so this is all based off of the work of people like Robin DiAngelo or Kimberly Crenshaw or someone like Professor Larry Ward. When we talk about things that are known as white comfort, it's not meant to be so much like a noun as much as it is meant to be an adjective, meaning that there are people out there because of the color of their skin who enjoy a certain amount of, let us just say, comfort in aggressing against or causing some kind of slight against people who are not of that color.
Oh, okay.
Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense, because I wasn't familiar with those particular writers.
Yeah, so the idea behind it is not to say that you as a white person are owed comfort, but you are in a comfortable space in the same way that a black woman, let us just say, from Nigeria would be very comfortable in Nigeria.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. A Chinese national is the most comfortable wherever in China.
Is it kind of like when they say in some school districts in certain states across the country, we don't want to teach these elements of history because it makes the student in those classes,
exactly,
never own slaves,
exactly,
uncomfortable.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I got it.
The kooky part of this, though, is the opposite side of this, where we now tell little white children that slavery is their fault and they're a direct.
Right, and that's way beyond.
They're directly recipients of the benefits of slavery, and thus, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So there's two kinds of kookiness that we can talk about here, but the one that I want to focus on mostly is that this is it's a silly thing for a teacher to do, but I also think that forgiveness is the most powerful thing that we can offer anybody,
yeah, yeah,
right? Laura doesn't look like she wants to forgive anybody. Laura's steaming over there. What's wrong?
Whom are we forgiving?
I'm saying the teacher...
Okay.
At this elementary school,
mm-hmm,
should not be fired. I think that she should just be take a little vacation, take a couple weeks off, come back.
My only doubt about that is that the school district did release a statement saying that they have trained a lot of their teachers since 2020,
mm-hmm,
that all the teachers have sat through countless hours of DEI training. So for that teacher to go through that training and then still come up with an activity like this is suspicious to me.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, Laura, you know what happens every time we have DEI training here? It's just, I'm just straight, just...
Don't say that on here.
I'm off in the distance, and Brian's like...
So, yeah, I'm talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion. The most important thing we need to remember is that...
And I'm just like, yeah, you know, yoga's fun. I like yoga, and...
You know what? This story, please let's not say Jack doesn't pay attention.
I don't. I'm sorry. Listen, I will be totally transparent about it. When I get the DEI stuff, I will engage with it to a certain degree, but it's not meant for me. It's not meant for biracial Jack Stein. You know what I'm saying?
No,
it's
I hear you. There are people who really need to hear this lesson. I'm with you.
I'm just saying that when that stuff comes up, I am already the most, whatever you want to call it, when it comes to people's needs or whatever it might be. I'm not going to do this thing where, I'll give you an example. Who originally sang Take It to the Limit? Not the Eagles or the...
It was the Eagles one, yeah.
Who covered it then?
I don't know who did Take It to the Limit.
Was it Etta James who covered it?
Probably.
Okay, so when I was in college, a very good friend of mine was a black woman, and we were taking the same ethnic studies and politics courses together, and we were very, very good friends, and she's also a musician, one of the most talented musicians I've ever met in my life. And so we start talking about Take It to the Limit. And so I say, I actually prefer the Etta James version over the Eagles version because it has this little bit more soul to it. There's a certain amount of, little bit more sadness behind it. Is this it? This is what I'm talking about. Okay. So, and this is a beautiful version, by the way, if you've never heard this. So my friend, who I'd been going to classes for months, says, pulls me aside out of class, and she goes, Jack, listen, I know that you're trying to do this like woke thing right now, but like you don't really need to do that in class in that performative way in front of everybody.
What the hell? What's that supposed to mean?
Being that she thought I was being like performatively woke because I preferred the way.
Oh, Etta James. I love me some Etta James. Right. Seriously, you're a fan of music, man.
Right? And I said to my friend, I said, I think you're missing the mark as to what I was trying to convey there. And for as much as and this is what like the crazy DEI lefty people always get wrong, is that sometimes people just are that way. They are just appreciative of other cultures, or they are just appreciative of other people. And yet what the like crazy DEI woke scolds do is they go, oh no, you don't actually know what Etta James was singing about, because
you haven't lived it.
Oh, and that's a different kind of racism that I have been on the receiving end of, which I am just averse to all DEI stuff. We went way deep into this story, but let's...
it's an important story.
It's an important story.
And I got to say, the Spokane School District is a different world than we have here west of the mountains in King County.
Yeah. So Shelton High School football coach has resigned after an unsanctioned drill injures several. Now, Spike, can you explain this to me? Because I don't understand what this... Don't know.
So,
Jack Brain, known sports.
Well, Jack got common sense, so Jack, you'll catch on quick. A football coach was substituting a gym class, and it was a weightlifting class. Now, the football coach used this opportunity as a substitute teacher to bring all the athletes in, not just the bulk of the team was football players, to do an unpadded, just guys in shorts and T-shirts, a full-on, full-contact tackling drill in a gym class, not a football practice, not after school, with kids who'd signed up for football, who were wearing protective gear and properly supervised. These kids were required to tackle each other without any kind of pads, and there were injuries involved. So a kid got a concussion. A kid dislocated his finger, and it's permanent damage, a doctor has told this particular student. And this coach just showed horrible judgment. He was put on administrative leave. The district has accepted his resignation.
Is this like the scene in Air Bud where the one kid, you know what I'm talking about?
I know the scene.
Let me reference the scene. So in Air Bud, there's a scene where at the very beginning of the movie, there's a kid who can't catch a pass.
Yeah, football.
I thought it was a basketball pass.
Oh, no, basketball. You're right. First Air Bud
was
basketball.
It was a bounce pass, basically.
Right.
And so the coach, who's trying to coach up the team, is doing bounce passes at this kid, but he's doing it so aggressive that it's hitting him in the face.
Right.
And so the other kid says, I forgot my bag in the gym. And he goes in, and then they see that coach is actually abusing that other kid because he's not. So the question I'm asking is, are these kids not performing well? Is that why the coach did it? Or is it just because he's a malicious, how do I say this safely on air?
I don't want to subscribe intent to the coach. I think it was just horrible judgment by a football coach who doesn't understand that gym classes aren't football practices, and not everybody who's in a gym class is an athlete who wants to be there to learn how to tackle better.
Okay, all right. Because when high school, I was doing really competitive swimming at a very high level.
Okay.
And the guy, Coach Conrad, is a guy who changed my life. He had such a fundamental impact on my work ethic and the way that I thought about how to approach different things.
A good coach.
He's a very good coach. But he was also a sociopath, because he had us do buds training drills, like SEAL training drills.
For your lung capacity?
Yeah, too? Basically. Ugh. So what he would have us do is you'd have to tread water like in water polo, right? But yeah. You would have weights in either hand.
In either hand. And strengthen your lower body.
At a certain point in time, your head starts going below the water line and he's going, blow! Meaning that when the water comes into your mouth in order to breathe, you have to blow it out.
Yeah.
So you're basically in panic.
You're mode. In SEAL training.
And the other thing that he would have us do is you would have somebody wrap their hands around your torso, basically, and you would drag that person as
dead,
you were
dead
swimming.
Man, yeah, dead man drill.
Dead man drill, right? Yeah. But the person underneath you was not allowed to come up for air.
Oh.
So it was a dual drill where you were yeah. supposed to hold your breath, and the idea was is that that was somehow supposed to make us stronger. I think we lost probably 40% of the team every year. They would just bail
because
it was too hard. It was too difficult.
Yeah.
And when your warm up is like, okay, everybody, we're going to do a mile and then you're going to get out and you're going to run a mile on the track. And then when you get back, we're going to do push ups. That should take you guys about 45 minutes and then we'll start practice. What I'm saying is that there are some coaches that I think don't realize that little bodies have a hard time with
yeah.
that amount.
And even in your coach who was going for SEAL training, these are kids who signed up to be on swim team. He's building the best team he
yeah,
can.
Yeah.
Not a 97-pound weakling in gym class who just got thurled into a wall.
Right. So, well, I'm glad that he's removed from that position.
Yeah, it was the right call.
Jay Inslee has signed a new bill to combat catalytic converter thefts. Should be a good bill. We got the audio on this, Laura. What happened here with this bill and catalytic converter thefts?
Well, so a senior prosecutor for King County testified in favor of the bill for this reason.
One of the more disturbing findings that we came up with was that how this crime disproportionately impacts lower income folks in your jurisdictions, the people who can least afford it.
I thought Inslee hated Washington. I thought he hated us.
Thought it was his personal playground.
I thought he was. I thought we were supposed to hate the man because he's an idiot. He doesn't do anything right. And then this is what I'm told from other people. And then you see he passes this really great policy with the opiate thing.
Yep,
he's got this
yep,
other
yep.
really great policy with the catalytic converters.
I know. Every twice a day, a stop clock is right, and twice a session.
I'm just saying
Inslee
that.
Is
I'm
right.
just saying that maybe sometimes the whole like person. This person is an idiot. They don't know how to do anything. That's my Inslee voice.
Okay.
That maybe sometimes we go too far with that.
There you go.
Because then you have this bill that came out. So the law enforcement said that they saw 82% fewer thefts last year. Based
that's
on all
incredible.
The right. That's amazing, right?
It is. You know, my catalytic converter went up on my truck. And it's a very, very expensive replacement. So when folks of lower income get their catalytic converter stolen from their car, like the report said, this can be a devastating financial blow.
It's like $1,000.
Yeah,
right?
Or more. Yeah, it's not like a $39 part.
I don't drive a car, so I don't know what anything costs for vehicles.
When my mechanic told me I needed to replace my catalytic converter,
yeah.
I said to the guy, man, I almost wish it was stolen. Then my insurance could cover it. And then he said, no, your car's got it placed in the middle of the engine. No one will ever see your catalytic converter. I'm like, lucky me.
We'll take a really quick break. When we get back, this is a fascinating episode that is unfolding with one of the largest media companies on the internet where they let go of an employee. And then when the boss was asked, why'd you let this person go? He said, I'm not going to talk about it. It's a crazy narrative. It's a crazy story. You're talking about heavy hitters in the world of political commentary.
Big money.
Big money. Big marquee names. But lips sealed. We'll talk about it when we get back right after this. Someone's not talking. So if you don't follow being terminally online the way that I follow being terminally online, you know what terminally online actually means, Spike?
You spend way too much time and it's your undoing.
Right. It's basically.
Yeah. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Well, and you do it so I don't have to.
So there are people that I have parasocial relationships with in the world of political commentary. I don't know them personally, but I know a lot about them because I am terminally online. And so I know the various goings on within their businesses. Does that make sense?
Perfect. Yeah.
So you know who gets hired, who gets fired. And, you know, it's kind of media. When you're in the media world, it's like being in the baseball world, I guess, or the sports world.
You got to stay up on everybody's game.
Right. Exactly.
It makes you think about how you think about things,
right.
Which is good.
And so one of the things things that I wanted to talk about today was the fact that Candace Owens, who is a very popular online media personality, she's a conservative commentator, she's an anti-vaxxer, she is deeply homophobic, deeply transphobic. What else? MAGA, big old MAGA. You know anything else about her, Laura? I mean, she's got a lot of different, pretty kind of vaguely anti-Semitic.
Yeah, well, that's the latest controversy, isn't it?
Yeah. So she works for Ben Shapiro's company, The Daily Wire. Now, Ben Shapiro is the co-founder and co-owner of The Daily Wire. He's also Jewish. A lot of people don't know this about the guy.
He is?
He's Orthodox Jewish. Yeah. And so he talks about it on a regular basis.
Right.
And over the last couple of months, ever since the October 7th attacks in Israel, Candace Owens has been dropping little kind of dog whistles here and there about how she really feels about the Jews, going so far as to say that there is a gang of Jews who run Hollywood. They're trying to take advantage of black people and saying pretty ridiculous things. She was let go or quit The Daily Wire on Friday. And Ben Shapiro was on Piers Morgan last night and he was asked about it. Now,
seems like the right thing to ask.
I don't necessarily want to talk about the gossip when we get into this clip. What I want to talk about is what it means to cultivate an audience. But here's what he had to say when he was asked about firing one of the most popular people on his network.
I'm not going to speak to this topic here.
So that's actually his normal speaking voice. Normal speaking voice. He talks that fast. I know, it's amazing.
Right.
I'm not going to speak to this topic, Piers.
At all?
At all.
You can't give me any insight into why she departed?
No hints, no nothing. I'm not going to speak to this.
Can I ask why?
I mean, you can ask.
No, I'm not. Can I ask why you don't want to say
awkward. Awkward.
Again. You can ask.
That's so cute.
I'm only curious because I know what a staunch defender of free speech you are.
So we can cut it right here, Lord. Basically, he goes on to say, like, you know, my company is we're a publisher. We're not a platform. Mm-hmm. I have the right to take anybody off of my business if I want to, but I'm not even in charge of the hiring and firing, so what does it matter? What I want to talk about today is what does it mean to cultivate an audience? Because what happens with the extreme kind of political commentary, both on the right and the left, I'm not both sides in here. What I'm saying is that this is a phenomenon that occurs wherever you go in the politics game.
Okay.
Is that when you cultivate an extreme audience, they will turn on you fast for any reason whatsoever. We saw this happen with that guy who he's got a syndicated radio show in a couple southern states, and he came out anti-Trump. And his entire audience effectively asked for him to be removed from his syndicated radio show because he was anti-Trump. When you cultivate a certain kind of audience that listens to your content and enjoys your content that is extreme in nature, when you deviate in any direction from that extreme nature, they view you as being compromised and they view you as being an outsider. Does that make sense?
Perfect sense, yeah.
So this is why Shapiro can't comment on this issue, because he knows that many people who take in Daily Wire content are fine with talking about trans people being pedophiles, fine with talking about gay men and women being demons, fine with talking about how rap isn't actually music, fine with kind of the overtures to racism. But then when you start talking about the Jews, all of a sudden, slow down there, guys. But that his audience wants it. That's the sad part about it. When you cultivate an audience of people who are that extreme, and then you turn around and you say, well, anti-Semitism is a bridge too far. You bought the ticket, buddy. You take the ride.
Yeah,
that's
well put.
That's your audience. And when you come out and when you say it's okay for somebody on my staff to say transgenderism should be eradicated from public spaces, to say that homosexuality should be criminalized, to say that drug addicts and drug dealers need to be executed, and you're fine with all of that. Open calls for violence. But then when one of your hosts says, what's going on with the Jews?
Been reported extensively.
That's a major issue, right?
The reason for
we can kill it.
Okay.
Right? Yeah.
So when you have an audience who's comes to your service, your show, your platform, for rage, for anger, for outrage, you know, that's the currency they're trading in.
Yes.
Like you said, when you go against the mob will turn on anything so quickly, and it's all mobs, both sides of the aisle. You're right about that.
This happened to a leftist. There was this happened to what's his name? The guy who, Al Franken.
Oh, absolutely.
When Franken had his radio show, and he started talking about being more of a centrist when it came to politics, people were talking about canceling Al Franken.
They were there for the extreme point of view.
Exactly.
No,
right.
You're right.
So this happens so consistently that I don't think that most broadcasters realize they're not in control. you have no, like, when you think, oh, I'm this thought leader and people listen to what I say because it's so dynamic and I got my finger on the pulse of America. And then someone comes to you and they start asking, hey, so how do you really feel? Tell us how you really feel about the Jews, right? All of a sudden you go, I'm not going to answer that.
You can ask all you want. I'm not going to answer. That was, oh my God. Did he parrot Elon for that? Is that where he got that move? I'm not going to answer that. I don't have to answer that.
No, I mean, what it is an attempt to try to shield himself from any criticism. I mean, what people
do. Or to turn on his audience, have his audience turn on him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because when you traffic in the political commentary game, you have to realize that it is maybe one of the most fickle games unless you are completely authentic. You can't have any pretense. And what I mean by that is I am not a brand. I will say whatever I want to say on whatever issue. Mm-hmm. I don't need to fit in whatever mold my quote-unquote audience wants me to be, right? Mm-hmm. So if I want to be critical of Donald Trump, I'll be critical of Donald Trump. If I want to be critical of Joe Biden, I'll be critical of Joe Biden. It makes no difference to me whatsoever. Can you imagine, though, that all of a sudden I'm MAGA Jack, and I'm the MAGA guy on the show, and I have to bend all of my thoughts to fit that framework?
Right, the mental gymnastics it takes to defend some positions in that arena.
An audience will turn on somebody in a second if they feel as if they've been lied to, and that's what I think is happening right now.
So Shapiro being very smart there and knowing his audience what not to give them?
Very.
Or was he being cowardly?
Both.
And not being able, okay, cool.
Both at the same time, right? So isn't that so interesting? That, like, our social dynamics never leave us, right? We don't really have thought leaders. We don't really have people that influence the way that we think. What we have is brands like Coca-Cola or Pepsi or whatever it might be.
Or Daily Wire.
Or David Bowie. Or David Bowie.
Throw him in there.
David Bowie's my thought leader.
Oh.
My most popular Facebook post that I ever made is I posted Bowie is God, and I had thousands of likes from all kinds of strangers. My most popular one, Laura. What's your most popular social media post?
Oh, God, I think it was when I was like 14 and I said, I like pumpkin pie. Like this if you like pumpkin pie.
And the pumpkin pie lovers came out of the woodwork for you.
They were into it.
Okay, so the secret to going viral is we need to get a 14-year-old who loves David Bowie as much as they love pumpkin pie. And then we'll go right to the top, right? We'll take a really quick break when we get back. Laura has a story about being attacked by an owl because everybody's talking about an owl that was terrorizing Tacoma's north end. But now they're talking about the owl attacks are going to begin again, anew. It's an owl. Punch it.
The talons are sharp. Dude.
I have a fist. It's okay. Brittle bones.
That'd go viral.
We'll talk about it when we get back right after this. So last fall, an owl terrorized Tacoma's north end, which is weird because I would have thought people in Tacoma would have not been afraid of an owl. It's
tough
an
town.
Owl.
Tough
it's
town.
A tough town,
yeah,
right?
It is. Yeah.
Also, owls are what are owls' weaknesses? Let me list off a few of them. Glass, arrows, bullets, baseball bats, right?
I mean, Einstein's fists.
Tootsie Pops.
My fists, right? I mean, there's frisbees. There's lots of things that you can use to... Nick, what's another thing you could defend yourself with if an owl is trying to attack you?
Oh, you know, like the delicate china that these two private school individuals are a part of, you know?
Thank you, my
friend. That's disposable of some sort.
Silver spoons.
You can use a pool noodle. Just get one of those bad
boys. Whip it around your...
Right?
Except you can't.
Why?
It's also worth noting that owls are federally protected animals, so you can't just go and take matters into your own hands by hurting these owls or trying to get rid of them yourself.
Okay, so you're telling me once again Big Owl is coming in and stepping in on my rights?
Biden's owls.
This is what you get in Joe Biden's America? Is that what you're telling me? You're telling me that I can't punch an owl even if it's attacking
me? That's what we're telling you.
Who was the person who was attacked in Tacoma? We got to say their name, right? Because if that person is being victimized by Big Owl, we got to let the people know out there.
For the people?
Who's standing up for the people, right? This is the kind of thing. Government, I got the heavy boot of government on my neck right now telling me that I can't defend myself. I'm sure if I went to Florida, if I needed to protect myself from a winged predator, I'd have the castle doctrine on my side.
Ron DeSantis wouldn't leave you subject to owl attack.
So you're telling me that if I am getting assaulted by a vicious avian creature that is attempting to harm me, I can't even use my umbrella to try to...
Funny you mention that, because the World Wildlife Federation recommends carrying an umbrella during spring when owls are protecting their babies, their owlets, and their nesting areas. That's why owls come after people. That you can wear a bicycle helmet, they recommend. Because owls' talons are knife-like.
So you're telling me that in spring, mm-hmm. when I am supposed to be enjoying what little nice weather there is, mm-hmm. that I'm supposed to go outside, and me, a full-grown, capable adult, wearing both a bicycle helmet and having an umbrella to defend myself against a bird that has no right to be here, a bird that's not even American, quite frankly. The only birds we need in the United States is the American eagle. I said it. We need to get rid of all other birds, all right? Well, we only need bald eagles all over the place, and maybe some red-tailed hawks here and there. But all other birds, we get rid of them. And maybe we keep corvids. Everyone likes corvids, right?
And the slamp. That's all I need.
And maybe a seagull or two. But we're getting rid of all other birds.
Not seagulls.
That's what I decree.
Offsprees, not seagulls. If I had to vote one off the island,
we can have
seagulls.
A nice vote on it.
That's maximum. That's very nice.
Nick, write this down. Maximum 6 birds in the United States. The rest of them we got to decimate. We got to take them all out.
6. Got it.
I'm talking finches, blue jays, scrub jays, whatever it is. We don't need them. We just need bald eagles all over the place, right? Remember, so, Laura, you were attacked by an owl, right?
I was in Discovery Park. It dive bombed me while I was hiking at dusk. And it was one of the coolest things that ever happened to me. I don't think I've ever been that close to an owl.
So how did you know that you were being dive bombed by a winged creature?
Because it came very close to my head.
So you turn around and you see the wingspan of a beautiful owl.
I saw it come straight at me. It jumped down from a tree branch.
Okay. Oh, and you saw it come directly. You saw the mm-hmm. whole thing come at you. That's
yeah.
cool.
It was very cool.
Then did you think to yourself, did your murder instinct kick in? Did your fear instinct kick in?
What? I was just awe and wonderment. And then I see the story and I realized that my life was in danger. Who knew?
So on the Central California coast, there are many different breeds of owls, and the native Esalen Indians believed that owls were actually an omen of death, and that you saw one, then that meant that somebody was on the verge of dying, right? That it was going to be a horrific. So every time I would go outside and Sarah would say, look up, I think that might be an owl, I would shield my eyes and I would go, no.
Good plan. That's how it works. You don't see it. It's not real.
Oh my goodness.
But I mean, I just don't. Okay. So we have the clip here from the Department of Fish and Wildlife explaining why the attacks are happening, right? Can we play that really quick?
That is a territorial behavior. These owls are, they're perceiving a threat to their habitat.
Okay, can somebody please tell the owls that this is America? Okay, this is America. It's not their territory.
Uh-huh. It's not their habitat.
It's not their habitat. Do owls pay taxes? No.
Nope,
can owls
suck off the?
Exactly.
Feet of governments.
Mm-hmm. Can owls be conscripted? No. Can owls vote? No. My argument is airtight. I have more right to go wherever I want to go over those owls than those owls do. And quite frankly, I don't know why we're kowtowing to these illegals coming into our country. They don't have passports. They don't have papers. Joe Biden's letting them do whatever they want to do.
Owlets once they have owls.
Once they have little baby owls here, you got the chain owl program. How many other birds are on this list or whatever it is? How many more birds are we going to have to deal with every year? How many, like dozens are probably on this
probably
federal?
Hundreds.
Joe Biden's America birds, falling apart every day more and more with his...
We need more windmills.
His bird agenda. Birdonomics.
Just a bunch of know-it-owls.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
I'm proud of the way you stood up for us Americans.
Hey, speaking of a true American, by the way, Dr. Z's coming on a couple of you, because I had a cardiac event on Monday that was super funny, and I called Dr. Z yesterday when he was on his anniversary with his lovely wife, and I said...
He took your call?
Of course he did.
Oh, my God. The man is unbelievable.
And I said, Dr. Z, I something happened to me in the workplace the other day. And he goes, I'm with my wife. And I go, yeah, but don't you want to come on the air and talk about it? And he said, I'm with my wife. So we shall now talk to Dr. Z about my cardiac event. And on top of all of that, former President Obama, back in the news as he's trying to help Biden with his potential loss to former president.
I know,
in the
crazy
ring.
When the old guy runs again as the new guy.
Yeah, it's like American Gladiators, like former competitor, former athlete. Ted Cruz wants lawmakers to get security escorts through America's airports. I wonder why that might be the case. We don't have kings and queens in the United States. Airports is the great equalizer. We'll talk about it when we get back right after this.